Well, I don't know how many of you online are watching who are a little younger. Every once in a while, we do a word of the day, and I think today is a good day to do that because the word servant or service is going to show up quite a bit. So if you want to keep track of how many times I say that, and then you can talk with your parents about what does it look like to serve Jesus and serve others because of what Jesus has done for us, okay? All right. Well, I came across a story this week. Two little guys, 5 and 3, Kevin and Ryan. Kevin's a 5-year-old, and Mom's making special pancakes, the kind you can only make one at a time. Now, the problem with that is she couldn't serve them both at the same time, so they're already fighting who gets the first pancake, right? And Mom says, ha, teaching opportunity. He says, you know, if Jesus was here, you know what he would say? He would say, you give the pancake to my brother and I'll wait. Well, Kevin gets thinking and he says, that's a good idea, Mom. And then he turns to his brother Ryan and says, Ryan, you be Jesus. you'll get it. All right. It's amazing how quickly we see things in a way that serve our needs. We live in a self-serve society. And you don't have to look very long to see that self-service is really self-serving. Self-serve restaurants, buffets, remember those? It's been a while. But essentially, the self-serve restaurant, you get to eat whatever you want, whenever you want, as much as you want. Self-serving. Banks have gone into self-service in big ways. Started with the ATMs. Don't have to stand in line. You can go whenever you want, skip the lines and go to that machine. And then they've since realized that it's even better to go online. And now we don't even have to go out. But indeed, we can anytime serve ourselves. Self-serving. So many ways in our culture, it's all designed to serve us. I guess the question is this, is it working? Are we more content? I would say even today there's something going on that says no. Down south there's this little thing called the Super Bowl happening. And commercial space for the Super Bowl has become really kind of ridiculous. Everyone puts all this into commercials knowing people are watching. And right now for a 30-second slot, this year, companies were willing to pay $5.5 million. That's before the production of the commercial. They wouldn't do that if they didn't know that people somehow were looking for something bigger and better to more serve themselves. Because if we make ourselves an endpoint, serve me, serve me, serve me, we're going against our design. And it's never going to be enough. And we'll never be content. I love this image of the difference between an Alberta prairie slough and an Alberta mountain stream. That slough. No outlet. Water just kind of comes into it. And by the end of July and August, if it's been hot, that slough is swampy. Stinky. Weedy. The last thing you're going to do is put a cup in there and drink out of it. Ugh. Mountain stream. Freshly fed. Flowing. As water comes in, it goes out. And we all sit by that crystal clear beauty. And we would, if we know it's a pure place, take a drink. There's life there. We're not made by God to be sloughs. We're made to be streams. We're made not to be the end of God's service to us, but recipients who serve. But we're not the first self-service culture. That's been around ever since humanity turned their back on God. We've become the endpoint. We're in the book of Isaiah, and we see how Isaiah addresses this matter of service. If you read Isaiah, especially from chapter 40 on, you pick up this theme a lot, the servant of the Lord, the servant of the Lord, the servant of the Lord. And there's a question, who is the servant of the Lord? Because sometimes it refers to Israel. Sometimes it seems to refer to someone coming far greater than the nation. And indeed, it refers to Jesus. Let's see how that works. So we go to chapter 41 and in verse 8. It says, but you, Israel, my servant. Verse 9, I took you from the ends of the earth, from its farthest corners. I called you and I said, you're my servant. See, it was always God's intent to serve and bless and love Israel, that they would serve and bless the world and show the world this is God, and they would serve others for his sake. But in Isaiah, we also read, instead of having that vision of being served to serve, they became a slew. And so we read in chapter 42, verse 19, who is blind but my servant? And deaf like the messenger I send. Who is blind like the one in covenant with me? Blind like the servant of the Lord. You've seen many things, but you pay no attention. There it is. Israel, you look around at the world and you see the need and you're to be a light. You're to serve them. But you're blind. Become a slew. And so the message of Isaiah is that Israel, who failed as a servant, God is now bringing another servant out of Israel who will serve the world, and that's Jesus. And so the prophecies come. Isaiah 42, 1, we're going to spend our time today. Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen one, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him. He will bring justice to the nations. Now, Matthew 12 picks up those exact words of prophecy and directly attributes them to Jesus. Israel, you failed as a servant, so Jesus is now coming to fulfill the servant role, but it's not over yet. What about those now who are served by Jesus? Well, let's go to John chapter 20. Jesus now has died on the cross, the ultimate act of service. He's offered a restored life. He's risen from the dead. And now he appears to his followers. John 20, 21. Again, Jesus said, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. We are now the sent ones into the world. Having been served and restored by Jesus, we are now his people to be his servants. Are we now becoming, though, a slew? Instead of the stream we were made and designed and called to be. What does it look like to be this servant? Well, I think we go back to Isaiah 42. If we are sent as Jesus is sent, there's some clues here. In fact, one commentator has written a really big commentary on Isaiah. He says this. Get the right page. There we go. He says, because Jesus is the perfect servant, he is also the model servant. Get that? Because he's the perfect servant, he's also the model servant. No, we cannot die for the world. Only he could do that, but there's so much about how he came to serve the world that he now models for us. He's the true pattern for all. Through him are the Lord's servants today. So let's look at Isaiah 42, and we're going to do it over 2 weeks. To talk about, as those restored by Jesus' service, how are we to serve others? What does that look like? What do we need to remember? And today, as we come to the table, there's a few things I think are really appropriate as we come to remember his service to us. That when we leave, in essence, we pick up that lamp and we go as a light to serve the world. All right. So we're restored by Jesus' service to God. What does that look like as we're sent to the world? Well, a few things, a few implications. The first one is this. We are loved by God. we go as those who are loved by God, as those who are served by God. Isaiah 42:1. Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I uphold, I delight, I love this servant. What does that mean? Therefore, we do not serve out of emptiness. We do not serve to get. We serve out of those who have been given. It's a huge difference. C.S. Lewis, when he wrote about love, he coined this little term, need love. How easy it is for us as humans to extend need love. It's like love with a hook, okay? I grew up fishing at Pine Lake with my grandpa, kind of a Alberta slough by the end of August, but we'd go to Pine Lake, and he would first go digging in his garden, and he'd have all these worms because we would fish for perch. And so there's the fish under there, and we're going to serve them with a worm, right? No, we're not. We're putting that worm on a hook because our service is intended to feed something in us. How easy is it for us to serve with a hook? How do we know? Oh, resentment's a big one. I'll serve you, but if you don't affirm me, if you don't notice, if you don't respond, if over time I don't get my little plaque on the wall saying servant of the year, we know we got a hook when we serve with a scorecard. I'll serve you, you serve me. 50-50 relationships doesn't work in marriage. And we keep score. Another way we know we're doing it with a hook is when it's convenient. We serve out of convenience. I'll serve, but I'll serve people like me who I'm comfortable with in ways that I'm comfortable with so I can make sure I stop if it starts getting a little messy. Or another big one here is I serve to take care of my guilt. So I'm kind of calculating, and yeah, I think I've messed up that bad, so maybe if I do this when it's all said and done, but I'm never sure, and it's guilty, and I'm wanting to be affirmed, and I want feedback, and I know I'm serving with a hook if criticism derails me. I say all that, and I'm convicted on all counts. What's the answer? We got to go back and recognize that we're loved by God. My servant in whom I delight. C.S. Lewis says there's one place where need love is appropriate, and that's us first coming to God. The only way that need is going to be satisfied is not by us trying to overcompensate in our own power. We first need to know God's delight and God's love and God's forgiveness. Matthew 5:3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed who come to God out of total need and poverty and say, God, I got nothing. I can't work my way back to you. I need you. And God says, I know. And so he pours his love out on us. Pure gift. And as we're recipients of the pure gift, now we can extend gift. And yes, it's a process because there's always this humanity in us. And there'll be this longing for affirmation and getting served back and all of that. And in the body of Christ, that should be happening, but it shouldn't be our motive. Pure gift. Jesus modeled it. John 13, I'm doing a little reading now, getting ready for our Lenten study, 40 Days of Decrease. John 13, Jesus washes his disciples' feet. You want to talk about an act of service. that was resented in that day. Only the lowest slave would do it. You would resent having to wash feet. How could Jesus do it without resentment and actually wash Judas's feet, who would betray him, Peter's feet, who would deny him? How could he do it? Verse 3, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and he was returning to God. Jesus knew God, the Father, sent him, loved him, had him in his hands and in his plan. He would return. He was loved by the Father. As a result, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water in a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. Knowing he was loved by the Father and served by the Father, Jesus could do the lowest act of service and the even lower act of service, which would be the greatest of all, would be dying on a cross. How's your service? Is there resentment? Scorekeeping? Calculation? Again, the answer doesn't come by trying harder. The answer comes by recognizing what the table means. Paul, when he prayed for the churches, what did he pray? That you will know God's love more and more. Because the more we know we're loved, let it overflow. We sang it. Let it overflow. If you're struggling to serve, start with the prayer, God, show me the greatness of your service to me. Reveal your love to me in all new ways. And be honest with him. Come to him, poor in spirit, and say, God, my motives are mixed. You need to change me. C.S. Lewis, this is his quote. He said, need love does cry to God out of poverty. But then, gift love longs to serve. We come to God with need love. He gifts us, and that gift love longs to serve, even suffer for God. God, help me know the depth of your service and love for me, because as that happens, I can't contain it as a slew anymore. It's got to flow. But then our next question is, but what really can I do? What have I got to offer? Well, the second implication, if we look at Isaiah 42, the model servant, not only is he delighted in, not only do we see as God's servant we're loved by God, but secondly, we recognize we're empowered by God's Spirit. We're empowered by God's Spirit. We're not doing it alone. Amazing, the videos that go viral. Back in December, there was one of a guy. He's at his son's high school basketball game. I think this is in Ohio in the States. So they're actually playing basketball at a gym, and some of the parents and family are there. It's all social distance. But here's what happens. And the story is this. They tell everyone to stand up for the national anthem. And then there's 5 seconds of silence, 10 seconds, 15. They look over, and the guy running the sound system is trying to figure out, and he can't get it going, and it's getting more and more and more awkward. And one guy up there, he's actually an airline mechanic, there with his wife and a couple daughters watching his son. Wife elbows him in the ribs, kind of, I know you're an airline mechanic, but you got a pretty good voice, right? And he starts to sing. Oh, say, can you see? And there's another father who quickly gets out his phone and starts to film it. And it goes viral. But you think of the awkward silence. Everyone knows there's a need, but I can't do anything about it. Hey, there's something in you that can do something about it. And the airline mechanic said, okay. Isaiah 42, verse 1. Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him. I'm going to put my very life in him. There's going to be something in him that is more than up to the need. Now again, there is no way in Isaiah's day they could have totally grasped the fulfillment of this, that he who would be the servant was actually God himself, fully God, fully human. But even in the New Testament, it maintains the mystery, and we read in Matthew chapter 3, verses 16 to 17, as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. Again, the mystery with Jesus as the Son of God, and it's not like the Spirit just showed up in his life at that time, but symbolically, Matthew is letting us know that Jesus, the Son of God, followed intimately the one who loved him, God the Father, and somehow did so in the presence and power of the Spirit of God. That gives extra weight to John 20, 22. We've already read verse 21. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I'm sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." God, what can I do? And he says, "You've got God's Spirit in you. Trust my Spirit in you." We look at the world and the injustice and the need for mercy. It's everywhere. And we say, "God, how can I begin to influence all of the injustice and the need in the world?" And yet, throughout history, God's people have said, "I'll go." And today, around the world, there are hospitals, there are schools that not only give physical help and education, but do so in the name of Jesus and point people to Jesus. City after city after city, there are soup kitchens and homeless shelters, programs, so many of them sent forward by those who are following Jesus. There are organizations committed to ending human trafficking and the sex trade. And there are organizations coming around young women with unexpected pregnancies, helping them walk to term, because someone said, "It might be huge, but your Spirit in me." Let's bring it down even closer to home. We look around and at people around us, and we know they don't know Jesus. And we believe God's truth that their eternity is in the air. And we say, how can I have any influence? Well, somebody said yes to God's Spirit. Many people have in a line, and you now know. No, you and I will never change someone's heart. It's not our job. We can't do it, but God's Spirit can and does and will. But we have to get over the excuse that I can't and instead say, "God, not in my strength, but your Spirit in me." Jesus, the perfect servant, the model servant, loved by the Father, empowered by the Spirit, we too, because of what Jesus has done, are loved by the Father, empowered by His Spirit. To do what? Well, that's a third implication. We are now sent to restore order to broken people in a broken world. We are sent to restore order to broken people in a broken world. There's a really old story, and if you've been around church for any length of time, you've heard it. It's attributed to Robert Louis Stevenson when he was a boy. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But as it goes, this little guy is staring out on a really cold night, face against the glass, outside. This was before there was electricity that would have street lamps, and instead a guy would come along with fire on the end of a pole and light the lamps. Okay? And he's staring out there, and it's his mom or his nurse, whichever version you have, says to him, "You're gonna get cold. What are you staring at?" He says, that man, he's poking holes in the darkness. Poking holes in the darkness. He's bringing light where it was dark. He's bringing order where we couldn't see. Back to Isaiah 42. "Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen one, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him." Why? "He will bring justice to the nations." The word justice there is a very interesting word. It has to do with governing, good governance. He will come in to chaos and bring good governance. He will restore order. He will serve into that darkness and that mess with the order of God. A way to get our handle around it, it's the same root as the word judge in the Old Testament. The book of Judges, you ever wonder about that? Why do they call them judges? I mean, Gideon, Samson, it's not like they sat on a bench with a gavel. But here's what they did. We read it was a time when people were doing what was right in their own eyes. So there's all this chaos going on in Israel. The people cry out to God. What does he do? In the midst of the chaos, as they cry out to him, he sends a judge. A restorer of order. That's what they were. God says, "You are restorers of order in the world. You bring my light into dark places." That's how you serve. And the beauty is, we're not called to be a floodlight. We're called to poke holes in the darkness around us. It's appropriate today that we have a lamp on the communion table. We come to be served and recognize what Jesus has done to serve us. But we don't leave the table hoarding that. We leave with a light to poke a hole. Where can we do that? Oh, nowadays? How can we poke a hole in the isolation? Who do you know who's lonely? Who's God putting on your heart? Give him a phone call. Who do you know who's not yet restored to life with God? Their life might be a mess, or at this point, it might look like they're treading water. But you know they need Jesus. Poke a hole. Start with prayer. We got this team. We're calling it the Missional Multiplication Team. And we're the ones on Sunday the 21st, 1 to 2 o'clock, just open up. Conversation that we hope will keep going on, what does that look like in our church? What's going on? What are the stories? What are the victories? What are the needs? What are the challenges? How do we support each other? But it starts by saying, "I can poke a hole. I can pray. I can reach out." What about our communities, our neighborhoods? What are the needs there? How can we poke a hole of light? When we look at the city of Edmonton and the social needs and the mess, when we look at issues of racial reconciliation, when we look at issues in the world, again, it's overwhelming. But God is not saying fix it all. He's saying poke a hole. You want to know how and where? I know one of Dan's favorite conversation topics is just this.
And he is our pastor in that area of missions, knows what's going on locally and internationally through our church, would love to get you connected. Or maybe you've got contacts, connections, family members. It's pretty hard with volunteering right now in COVID, but with the cold, how can we support, maybe even financially, our inner city ministries? Where is God laying it on our heart? Not by guilt, but out of gratitude for what he's done for us. Come alongside sisters and brothers who are serving these needs in the name of the Lord to the glory of God. How can we poke a hole? Where is God burdening our heart that we carry his light as servants into the darkness? We're not all that different from little Kevin, who figured out, how can I have the first pancake? That's our bent as fallen people. But as people restored by God, forgiven, as we know we're loved and delighted and empowered by his Spirit, we can come to the table, have God speak into those needy places in our heart and life, and then out of gratitude, extend his love and his service to the world. Ah, we are deeply served by God through Jesus, but not as an end in itself. We are served that we might serve, that we might poke holes in a dark world to his glory. Let's pray. Father, you know this speaks to us. I think especially in COVID, it is just so easy to turn in. I see that tendency myself. And certainly there are limitations, it seems, around some of the opportunities. But God, you are not limited by your Spirit and working through us if we would only lean into you, seek you, put ourselves in a place to come to you authentically with our need, that your love would serve the ever deeper places. And then out of gratitude, out of your fullness, out of the presence of your Spirit, extend that love. So God, as we come to the table, we know we need to come honestly, thanking you for the cross that you carried. But seeing that because of the cross, nothing now holds us back anymore from being your servants. There's no more excuses. We're free to serve. We're free to love. So God, today we come, first of all, knowing we need the work of the cross. And we come honestly. And God, whatever's on our hearts, we lift to you. Our needs, our failures, our mess, our chaos, our darkness. But God, thank you that you come in your light. But then you leave the light with us to carry from this table. So even as we come, burden our hearts, God, with those people, those causes on your heart that you have our names on. Nothing can hold us back, because nothing held you back from serving us. So hear our prayer as we come to the table.